Welcome to episode 483 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther, and this is the show that puts you in control of your favorite movies, music, shows, and games. And we are deep in hay fever season.
Oh, man. This is the first year that allergies have really nailed me, and I'm hating this. And I have a feeling that now that it's hit me, like, this is never going away, right? This will be a reoccurring thing for the rest of my life.
Yeah, probably. So bear with us and our respective, probably nasally voices this evening. But we do have some stuff that we want to catch up on because it has been a while again. We missed a week. So we have some news, we have some feedback, and we are going to start with a message from Jose. Jose actually left us a couple of points. We're going to cover two of those. And you can send us feedback at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. So his first point is on episode 478, and I think again on 480, Josh mentions the lack of a stop button on the TiVo. I always use the TiVo button as the stop button. There's a setting that lets you disable the live TV window when you're on the main TiVo screen. With that option, hitting the TiVo button takes you to the main TiVo page with no content playing, so effectively stopping it. Something you might want to try. So, Josh, is this what you ended up doing? Because I think we talked about maybe using live TV as an option.
I don't think I've actually done anything yet. Dude, I've been so busy. I've watched zero TV in the last couple of weeks. So I haven't done anything. But reading through the suggestion from Jose, it does sound exactly like the right type of solution for someone like me. And by that, I mean a former Windows Media Center user. Because it sounds similar to what would happen when you press stop in Windows Media Center. You'd go back to the start screen, or maybe you'd hit stop and then hit the start button to go back to the main start screen. So I do like this idea a lot. I think as long as you're not enjoying the functionality of being able to go to the home screen of TiVo while watching live TV, then right. That sounds like a pretty good solution.
Right. And so that's why this wouldn't work for me, because when they added the ability to have that live thumbnail while you were using the TiVo menu, that to me is an added benefit. I like that. I can actually be browsing while not giving up what I'm watching. So I don't know that I would want to give that up, but this makes total sense. You just program your stop button on your remote to mimic the TiVo button, turn off that TiVo live screen, and then you also still have that menu button, perhaps, be the TiVo screen. They just serve different purposes for depending on what you want to do.
Right. Yep. I like it. You wanted me to do the other bullet point? Okay. He also says on episode 482, Richard talked about not wanting to spend more time and money, to make another backup of his 20 terabyte video library. Makes sense. He says there are two fairly economical options that come to mind just to have as an emergency backup. The first is to sign up for a Google Business account, which comes with unlimited storage. It's $12 a month, and you can have everything backed up to the cloud. Yes, it's a recurring cost, but for 20 terabytes of cloud storage, I think it's worth it. The second option, and I think this is actually the option that you were thinking about doing, Richard, is to just get some good old 3.5-inch hard drives to back up to and just put them in a safe or a friend's house. He says, of course, this won't be an ongoing backup and you would manually have to back up new files, but at least you have something and you can get 4 to 6 terabyte white label hard drives for anywhere from $50 to $70 on a good deal. It still gets you up in the $300 range, but it might be worth the peace of mind. You like either of those options, Richard?
Yeah, I think the second option is likely what I'm going to end up doing. And it coincides nicely with something that I wanted to do with the Drobo anyway, which is that I wanted to reformat my Drobo. I know, like, what a horrific concept, right? I wanted to reformat my Drobo so that I could take advantage of a larger overall drive size. right now, I am currently limited to, I believe, a total of 16 usable terabytes on the drive the way that I have it configured. But it's possible to configure it for a larger size, but it's not dynamic.
Oh.
So, you know, you can keep on adding drives, but depending on what that ceiling was when you initially set it up, then it may not be able to go any larger than that 16. I'm pretty sure it's 16 terabytes. So if I want to do that, I have to offload everything.
Right.
And then load it back on, and then I'll be able to continue to swap out drives to make it much, much bigger. I think it goes up to 32. And this was something I believe that they made possible with a firmware update, which is why, you know, you might ask the question, well, why would you have set it up to not be the maximum amount of storage? And it's because that wasn't available as an option at the time, as far as I know. So I think this is going to make a lot of sense. And, you know, just from over the years, upgrading from old 2 and 3 terabyte like green drives and stuff like that, I probably have at least half a dozen of those lying around that I can use to put content off to and then load it back on. And then I'll just leave it on those drives and put them someplace fairly safe and dry.
I just came up with a really great idea.
Okay.
This is a foolproof option.
I'm sure already this sounds good.
It's so good. It's so good. You're going to love this. So,
all right.
You back up all of your ripped movies and all of that stuff to a bunch of these hard drives. Okay. The bigger the drives, the better. And then you want to do offsite backup. So you send them to me and I'll store them in my Plex server.
I am fairly certain that will push my argument for a case of fair use. If for any reason I don't know, face some fight about backing up the DVDs that I own, but you know, yeah, right. I'm not going to do that.
Okay.
I'm not going to do that. But, you know, good idea. Hey, you know, we have the entirely legal, I'm sure, Plex library sharing option in the meantime, though. So,
right.
It's almost as good, right?
Except if I want to watch one of your 4K movies.
That probably doesn't stream so well.
Not that I would ever do that, right? Because it's, you know, who knows?
Yeah. I need a computer that would transcode better to let people do that.
Yeah. All right. Well, we did get one more message, and this was from our friend that we lovingly call Captain Paul. Captain Paul of the High Seas, sending us another message about Sea of Thieves, of course. He loves this game. I'm not sure that there's anybody who loves Sea of Thieves more than Paul, and I'm happy for him about that. And he just wants me to love it too. So he had to send along a YouTube link for a trailer for their newest update, the Sea of Thieves anniversary update, for a new story-based mission. That's what he's trying to pull me in with, is the allure of good storytelling in games. Apparently, this new update is called Tall Tales, Shores of Gold. And it looks like it might have an interesting story, but sorry, Paul. This still doesn't really look like a story game. Sorry, buddy. And I'm so into The Division right now. I'm not stepping away from The Division to play Sea of Thieves. It's not happening. Sorry, Paul. But I'm really glad that Paul and hopefully lots of other people still love Sea of Thieves.
Absolutely. So if people love Sea of Thieves or The Division or anything else that they want to tell us about, they can reach us at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com, or you could also use the contact form on our website, which works now.
Yay. Thanks.
Woohoo!
All right. Well, Richard,
yeah,
this is going to be a little surprising to some people.
No. We're going to do the thing that we always do in every episode of Entertainment 2.0 and start it out with a story about Plex, right?
Right. No. Actually, that's what we've done for the last 200 episodes of Entertainment 2.0. But for the first 200 episodes of Entertainment 2.0, we started it off with a story about Windows Media Center. And that's what we're going to do tonight.
What?
Windows Media Center, back in the news, kind of. Probably not in any way that anybody was hoping for, though. So, Charlie Owen, the mostly loved, I think, former program manager from Microsoft's eHome team. Like, just saying some of these words brings back such happy memories.
I know.
Like eHome and all that stuff. Charlie Owen was the program manager over Windows Media Center for a while, and he noticed that some of the older Media Center stuff that Microsoft has had available for a while has been disappearing from Microsoft sites. So he still had it laying around on his hard drives or Drobos or wherever he keeps some of this stuff, and decided to throw the old Windows Media Center SDK, that stands for Software Development Kit, up on GitHub. So a lot of people are going to think this means, oh, it's the source code for Windows Media Center?
Nope.
That's not what this is.
That's what they should have done 5 years ago.
Instead, this was the set of tools and sample applications and all that stuff that developers could use to build plugins for Windows Media Center.
Yep.
So it's not the most useful thing to have anymore, but as, you know, for preserving history, it's nice that Charlie Owen did this.
Right. As an archivist action, I think this is really cool. But I thought the same thing. I'm like, what's the point of that now? So, okay, maybe not so cool.
Yeah, it's not really that cool. So, but it did pop a question into my head.
Okay. Richard. Yeah.
If Microsoft were to release the source for Windows Media Center, and if they were to do that, I have no doubt that the community would step in and make versions of this that you could install pretty darn quickly.
Dude, you have my heart racing.
Would you go back to Windows Media Center if it was available as an open source project?
Oh my God. yes, I think the answer is yes. Not an emphatic yes. The killer nowadays is that the apps need to be there.
Exactly.
Right? And the apps aren't there. So is that good enough? Could it be, and maybe here's the thing, right? Could Media Center be made as an app that ran on other platforms? Like maybe on the Apple TV or on Plex or on the Amazon Fire Stick, that could be compelling.
Or the Roku, or
did I not say Roku?
You didn't say Roku. Oh. Or the Xbox?
Yeah, yeah. That, I think, could be actually compelling. And that would be really interesting. You don't think?
No, I don't think. I don't think. Like, for them to do that, I think they would have to strip a bunch of stuff out of it, like all of the DRM stuff for Cable Labs and all of that type of stuff. I think they'd have to remove, and that's probably enough effort to make them not want to do it at all. Because what do they gain? What do they gain by doing that?
Well, right, and it would really only be a file player, right? Like, they're not going to be able, without that, like, encrypted content stuff, you're not going to be able to use it with tuners and things like that necessarily. I mean, maybe an over-the-air tuner.
Yeah, totally an over-the-air tuner.
Yeah. But, interesting. Well, you know, that's an interesting thought experiment. I'm not going to let myself get as excited as you just made me for a tiny moment.
You were more excited than I expected.
Oh, yeah, because to date, I still believe it was and is and has been and will be the best experience we've had in a DVR product.
Yeah, agreed. But
yeah,
I don't think I would do it. I don't think I would build another one.
No. Well, I wouldn't build a Media Center PC. Not a PC.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would run it as an app on a platform. Absolutely.
I would probably run it as an app on a platform. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm not building another home theater PC for this.
Yeah.
Now, but I know that's not true for a lot of our listeners because they are probably, for things like
and
Plex
we know
and
people
stuff.
Who are still using it. We know people who still right. use Windows Media Center.
We do.
And I am really impressed by that.
Yeah, for sure.
But I can't do it anymore. Now, nope. while we're lauding Charlie's willingness to make this stuff available, it's also worth noting that Charlie was the guy who, whether this was his message or something that he needed to convey, he was basically the guy who said, What do you mean? You don't need components to make all your apps look alike. This is just a kit. Just make it look like whatever you want to. We're not going to give you the things that make them all look alike. That's bad. And
yes.
I truly believe that that was one of the biggest things that prevented people from jumping onto this platform because they didn't have the building blocks to make stuff look like it belonged there.
Yeah, they really didn't. I dabbled in Media Center plugin development. I even released a plugin for monitoring the status of seat and tuners. And it was a friggin' nightmare working with the software development kit because they gave you nothing when it came to UI components. You're right. It was not fun.
Yep. Oh, wow. Okay. And so here in our chat room right now, we have someone saying that they just rebuilt their Media Center PC because the one that they had died a week ago.
Holy cow.
That's awesome.
So I'm curious, are you doing this on Windows 7 or are you doing one of these like run Windows Media Center on Windows 10 hacks? Because Windows 7 isn't going to, wow, Windows 7 x86. Windows 7 isn't going to be supported in a year. What are you going to do come January, my friend?
Well, yeah, it isn't. But let me just say that I was just at a client site where they are running what I would consider a mission critical piece of hardware on Windows XP.
XP? Come on, people.
It happens. Okay. It happens.
So the listener in the chat is saying that he's been dipping his toes into Plex. So it sounds like that's where he's thinking of going from there, which is a pretty common scenario. It's what you and I did. It's what a lot of our listeners have done. All right, cool. So let's move on. It's always fun to dip our toes back into the Windows Media Center world, but let's move on. We have a new app available on the Xbox One, DC Universe. They've released their app for the Xbox One. It's the first game console to get the app. When the service launched a few months ago, it was available on mobile and web browsers, of course. And then it eventually came to Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, Android TV, and Roku. So it's basically on all the major things except for the game consoles. So it's now available on the Xbox One, which is cool. We've talked a lot about DC Universe in the past, so we don't need to go through all the details, but in addition to all of the comics and stuff that you get in this service, they do have a lot of shows that you can watch on it. That's why it makes sense on these video platforms. They've got old Batman cartoons and stuff like that, lots of old cartoons and things, but they've also got new original content, shows like Titans, Young Justice. They've got a Swamp Thing show coming at the end of May, a Harley Quinn show, and a Stargirl show coming later this year. So it makes sense for them to get this on all of the platforms. And I'm sure it's going to come to PlayStation 4 eventually. It's probably not long behind the Xbox One. And I do think it's kind of weird that they went Xbox One first when there's twice as many PlayStation 4s in the world. But I wonder if this is a US-only service. If it is, while PlayStation 4 is destroying Xbox One in worldwide sales, it's a lot closer in the United States. So maybe that's why. But DC Universe, if you're interested in the service, it's $8 a month or $75 for a year, which doesn't sound bad until you compare it to the story that we were talking about a couple weeks ago, which is that whole Disney Plus subscription, which is going to have way more, but this also includes comic books and stuff like that. So, and we've heard really good things about Titans. So, all right. One more video story, and this is from our friend Dave Zatz.
Yeah, and this is not surprising. He had uncovered that TiVo commercial skipping was coming in a planned update, and I have it. It already hit my box. Now, I haven't had a chance to try it because I really don't have a whole lot of recorded content on my TiVo just yet, but I went and set it up. And as a reminder to people who went and used the IFTTT solution for skipping commercials, you need to disable that because it will double skip and you don't want that to happen. So make sure that you turn off your IFTTT commercial skip thing, and this will take care of it for you and automatically skip commercials for those shows that have the skip flag next to them in your recorded shows. Now, that is going to be, I think it's on like 20 some different channels, and it's usually primetime shows. I think his post indicated that it's only primetime. It's not really only primetime, it's usually primetime. But it is, you know, for example, if there are new, I'll put that in quotes, episodes of something that is running maybe at a later time on a network or something like that, you might still find that it has the skip tag. It really just depends on the network and, you know, whether they're covering it or not. So this is a great feature. I love it. I love that they're doing this. I love that we're here and that companies realize that getting eyeballs on those ads isn't the only thing that makes them money.
Yeah, for sure. Cool. Yeah, I do want to check this out. This is available on Bolt and Romeo devices. So pretty much available on all of the common devices, right?
Yeah, and I have a feeling it's going to be rolled down to the premieres, but I'm not 100% sure of that.
The premieres are really old at this point, aren't they?
They are. They are. And they don't have the Hydra, but I thought I heard rumors that this is something that they might do. So I don't know. Well, I could be pulling that one out of thin air. I don't know.
All right. Well, speaking of pulling things out of thin air, rumor on the audio front that Amazon is working on yet another audio streaming service. This one being a high fidelity music streaming service. So better than CD quality is what the rumors are saying. $15 a month, which makes it less than Tidal, because Tidal's high-end streaming service is $20 a month.
Right, and that's exactly what I thought, right? Tidal, we are coming at you.
Right, for sure. Here's the thing that I don't like about this. If this is real, that will mean that Amazon has 4 music streaming services? Am I counting this right?
So it's getting ridiculous.
The high fidelity one, right? Then they have Amazon Music, right, which is just the ad supported free stuff. Prime Music, which, right, I think you have to be a Prime member to have.
Yep. And no ads, but limited library.
Right. And then Music Unlimited, which is more like Spotify and stuff like that, where it's huge library and cost more.
Right. And by the way, just to kind of expand the number of SKUs, we have family plans associated with some of those too.
Right. This is so convenient. Like, I don't know how anybody could keep all this straight and be able to explain it to friends and stuff like that.
Yeah. It's crazy. It really is crazy. I will say I still use Amazon Music. I have Amazon Music Unlimited. And as tempting as it is to move to Apple Music because it would be so convenient, I'm still using Amazon and I'm still really happy with it. So I don't know.
Would you consider this higher fidelity version?
The only way that I would consider this is if it would also be available through Sonos. So for me, the majority of my listening to my Amazon Music service is either through the car or through Sonos. And I would want it to sound as best it could on my home system.
Right.
So maybe I would consider it. But I mean, right now I get an advantage as a Prime subscriber. I get a discounted version, like I get a $7.95 payment for Music Unlimited, as opposed to the $9.99 that it normally would be for people. Mm, so right. Are they going to discount this for Prime subscribers like the other programs? Yeah, let's add some more SKUs. Come on, let's do it.
I bet they wouldn't, considering it's already cheaper. Like if this price is real, I bet they don't discount it for Prime subscribers.
So I don't know if it would be worth double the price.
Maybe they require it.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe.
I don't know. All right. Gaming news. Only one big story here, and that is from Microsoft. This is some updates coming to the Xbox as part of the 1905 update. 1905 means 19 as in 2019 and 05 as in May. So it's not May, although it's May when you're listening to this, but this update has not been released to the general public yet. So this is just insiders right now. But some nice features here coming. The first one is called Play Later, and this is specific to Game Pass subscribers. It's essentially you make yourself a little backlog of games that you're either currently playing or want to play eventually, and it's just an easier filter down list of games, you know, because Game Pass has well over 100 games in it, and if you could just easily see, oh yeah, I wanted to play this one next or whatever, then that actually makes a lot of sense. And you'll be able to manage that play later list from the Game Pass mobile app on your phone, which makes even more sense. So I think that's an awesome little usability thing to be putting in there. They're also making some changes to some of the social features. So the friends list now will show you what type of device your friends are on. So the Xbox app is obviously on the Xbox, but it's also on Windows 10 PCs and mobile devices. And it could be that your friends are playing Minecraft on PC, or they're chatting with you from their mobile app. And now you'll actually be able to see this. Now, you'll be able to see it by having a little icon next to their name that looks like a phone, or it looks like a PC, or like, actually, I don't remember what the icon looked like for an Xbox. But here's the thing that I think is kind of weird about this. And from a usability perspective, I'm curious what you think about this, Richard. If you log in on your Xbox and you've got friends in all of these platforms, the only ones that'll have icons next to them are the people who aren't playing on the console that you're on. So if you're on your Xbox, you will only see icons next to people who are on PC, mm-hmm, or phone. And if there isn't an icon, then they're on an Xbox. Does that make sense? Do you like it?
I don't really have a problem with it. You know, it reminds me a little bit of how when we had these messaging clients that we ran on our desktops all the time, and people were running that messaging client on a mobile phone, there would be a little mobile indicator next to their name to let you know that they were mobile versus sitting at their desk all the time, in which case there wasn't an icon next to them because they were on the same platform that you were on. Mm. So it kind of follows that same thing, just to let you know that they are kind of in a different situation than you're in.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. So I like it. I think that'll be cool. The other one on the social side is they're going to separate how messages come to you. So if you get a message from a friend, it's going to come through and the interface is going to be exactly the same as it is now. It's just listed under conversations. You'll go there, see all the messages from all of your friends. However, if you get a message from someone who isn't a friend of yours, it's going to go into a separate section called message request. It doesn't show up with your friends. You effectively have to accept that message coming in, before replying to it or whatever. And you have the ability of turning off notifications. So maybe you really don't care if messages are coming in from other people. You'll maybe get to them in the future or not. This honestly feels like Microsoft saying, wow, people really are having spam issues. We got to do something because this is getting out of control and we haven't found a way to stop the spam. So how about we at least make it less annoying? So I like the fact that they're making it less annoying. I wish they could do more to just stop the spam, but they haven't apparently figured that part of it out yet.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm not convinced that anybody on any platform has figured that out yet. Reference my phone today.
And then the other update that's coming, I'm shocked that it took this long. Like, the Xbox has been around for the Xbox One has been around for 5.5 years at this point. They're finally fixing sorting on the My Games and Apps list.
Wait, I don't understand. When you look for a movie that, or a game, or an app that has an article as the first word of its title, don't you want to search for it by that? Like, you know, if I had something called The Entertainment 2.0 Podcast, wouldn't I want to search for it by T?
No one does that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so the example that they use, an actual example, is a super popular game called The Witcher. It's been under T this entire time. It's finally going to be under W, where it belongs. This also applies for games that start with A or An. So all of those will now just be kind of nixed from the title when it comes to sorting. The other problem that I have with all of this is some of these yearly games or more frequent games will change the way it works. So the biggest offender in my life is NHL. A couple of years, the game title was EA Sports NHL 15 or whatever. And then the next year, it'll just be NHL 16. So they're not together in the list. Because they had to put EA Sports before the NHL some years, but not other years. Why? Yeah, why do you do this?
That's just a branding manager that needs to be fired.
Yes. Yes. I agree. All right. So again, all of that is insiders currently. You know, if you're on Alpha Ring or skip ahead, or any of those early rings, you might already have this. If you're in some of the lower rings, you're probably going to be getting it anytime now because everybody's probably going to be getting this within the next 3 or 4 weeks. All right. It's also, we're recording this on April 30th. You're listening to this in May. Hope you're listening to this in May. So that means new games with gold all month long on Xbox One. Marooners. This is honestly a game I've never heard of before. It sounds like a party game, lots of mini games and stuff like that. And it's only like a $15 game anyway, so it sounds like that kind of game. May 16th through June 15th, The Golf Club 2019. This is supposed to be a really good, realistic golf sim. So if you like golf games, like, cool. Like, this is probably going to be really good, and you should definitely check this out. Your Xbox 360 backwards compatible games for the first half of the month, Earth Defense Force, Insect Armageddon. Wow, that is really hard to say all of those words together. It's a shooter. It's 360 game, so of course it's a shooter. And then the second half of May is a game called Comic Jumper. This is another one I had not heard of. It's a 2.5D action game. The premise sounds...
What does that mean?
Gamers know what that means, Richard. Just ignore it and move on. The premise of this actually sounds kind of cool, though. You are... Like, the game is from the perspective of a comic book author and illustrator who's not the greatest at his job. And the game actually takes place inside of the comics that he makes. And it goes between a bunch of different comics. So the levels and stuff end up being completely different because you're in different comics. That sounds kind of cool. And it reviewed fairly well when it came out back in 2010 or whatever year it came out. So those are your free games on Xbox in May, despite the fact that it's almost May. Sony still hasn't released their list of PlayStation Plus games for May. Now, granted, they don't normally actually become available until like the 5th or 6th or something like that, but it's annoying to me. They're not even going to be announced until May. So next week, we'll talk about your free PlayStation games. That's it for our news for this week. So let's get into what I know is a lot of people's favorite segment on the show. What's going on in our entertainment centers? Richard, it's been a couple weeks. What have you been doing in your entertainment center?
I wanted to revisit something that we talked about a couple weeks ago, and that was the update to Plex. I believe that is still in beta, that changes the overall layout so that the primary navigation is now on the left-hand side of the screen. You and I talked about this when it was first announced because we were worried about how discoverable it would be. This menu just kind of exists on the left without any affordance, without any clue that there's something over there. And you just kind of have to know to go to the left to find the menu. Now, the good news is that when you launch the app, it actually starts with that expanded. So your home, if you will, every time you go into the app is going to show that menu expanded until you move off of it, in which case it collapses. And that's your clue that, okay, I could go back there and it's probably there. So that does, I think, help with that and address that problem that we had. Overall, I'm pretty happy with the changes that they made. You may remember that I was not a fan of the top navigation that they did. But here's the rub. Here's the problem. The top navigation did what I thought was a pretty good job of trying to break your content down into categories. Basically, your major areas in the application were based upon the content type. Was it a movie? Was it a TV show? Was it music? Was it a photo? Or was it some other sort of video? Those were your options. Now, your options are specific libraries, and you pin them into this left navigation. So it starts with all of your navigation, or with all your primary libraries, and then you can decide what else you want to include in that primary navigation. If you don't pin every single one of your friends' shared libraries that you access, getting to them is now a royal pain in the backside. They've done nothing to make it easy to move between libraries of similar type owned by different people. And for all of its faults, that was one thing that the old top navigation did really well.
Yeah.
So they kind of went backwards on that one, in my opinion. But otherwise, overall, I like it. I like the navigation. I think it's logical. I think it makes sense. I think most people will understand how to use it. I just think they need to come up with a better way of exposing other people's libraries so that you don't have to go in every one of your interfaces because you have to do this everywhere. It's not propagated across your different clients. You need to go in and identify which of the libraries you want to have in that left nav. Josh, have you had any chance to play with this at all yet?
I've not really played with it much yet, but I'm curious, have you played much with the search functionality? Because I wonder if they're trying to really kind of push people into search, or maybe they're seeing a lot of people just using search as libraries continue to expand. And maybe if I want to watch The Bourne Ultimatum, and I'm not sure whose library it's going to have, maybe I'm just going to search for The Bourne Ultimatum and pick whichever one is available.
I haven't really done that. You know why? Because 10-foot search sucks.
Yes, that is true.
I mean, it's still just really, really bad. So, it's good. You know, two step forward, one step back, right? They're getting closer. It's getting to be a really good, consistent experience, but they need to solve this. They need to fix this. The other thing, and we've talked about this before, and we've talked with them about this. I don't like that Plex is trying to be your home base for all of your content. It's an app that sits on a platform that already has apps for all your other stuff. It should play that way. It should, in my opinion, expose its content and make that searchable through whatever ecosystem it's on, be it Roku or TiVo or Apple TV. They don't want to do that. They want you to go into their thing and use their thing to get to everything else.
Right.
And I honestly don't think that that is how a lot of people who are already familiar with how you use Netflix, how you use Hulu, how you use ABC and CBS and all the other streaming services that they can get to easily, they're familiar with their apps. They're just going to go into those apps. I know they're trying to create a consolidated experience, but they're not doing it any better than anyone else. So I don't understand why they're bothering. So there's that. Okay. So I really want to get your thoughts on this as you have a chance to play with it more in your environment too, because you have other people who are playing with it, right? Like, I'm the only person who's looking for stuff on other people's libraries. As far as Edward is concerned, as long as it's on our movie library, he's happy. So he's not really testing the capabilities of this. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that your family is more likely to be doing.
Yeah, for sure.
So that is kind of bleeding edge kind of stuff. On the retro side of things, I did some spring cleaning over the last week or two and found some crazy stuff in my closet and in my file cabinets, including a DVD. I didn't know what it was. It was like a recordable DVD, and it was just like in a file folder somewhere in my closet. I'm like, what is this doing here? It was a DVD that Media Center, and I believe this was like Media Center Edition, back when there was a Media Center Edition of Windows XP.
Right.
And it could burn recorded shows that you had watched to a DVD. And it created a DVD that had a Media Center-like interface to watch the shows that were burned on the DVD. And I loaded this onto my computer today. And I'm like, what is this? And I just sat back. I had the biggest smile. And it was just such terrible quality.
Yeah, it's got the Windows XP Media Center Edition UI feel going on. And everything's 4x3.
Yeah, SD recording right. Over the air, right? Like, it was terrible. But wow, it was cool. I also found all kinds of brochures from past CES events.
Oh man.
Of Media Center targeted products.
Really?
Like, do you remember when DirecTV was going to be coming out with a separate tuner device that was USB and you could connect it to your PC?
It was, yeah, that was such a big deal at the time. Never happened.
Nope. I also found brochures for Lifeware. I don't know if anyone remembers that.
That
was a very expensive custom smart home system built on Media Center. And frankly, I honestly believe that a lot of the work that you and Matt and I have done over the years on Homeboy was somewhat influenced by Lifeware, because it was kind of the gold standard for how to build smart home into Media Center.
Right, right. Which I still think makes total sense.
Yep, I would agree with that. I would agree with that. So it was very cool finding all of this stuff in my old files and just stuff that I haven't gone through in years and years and years. I got a good kick out of that.
That's cool.
All right. So watching stuff on TV, I have started season, or I guess I should say series 2 of the UK version of The Office. I'm up to speed on Modern Family, a few episodes of Deadwood. The Orville had its season finale. Really, the last two episodes of the season were intimately related in a story arc, and they did such a good job with it. I love that show. I was so happy with that. The Amazing Race I mentioned, I think the last time we were talking, as always, The Amazing Race didn't record properly for me. I had to go find it. I had to go make sure that it was named properly to record. So I don't know what's up with that, but I am recording and watching that. We started part two, or I guess season two, of The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. That's really cool. I really enjoy that series, so I'm glad that's back. I watched all, and by all, I mean five episodes of a largely unknown and failed TV series from 1980 called Beyond Westworld. And I knew that this existed because when I was watching Westworld on HBO, and I went back and I watched the original movie again and its subsequent sequels, I learned that you could also buy this Beyond Westworld series from Amazon. But all the reviews were like, this looks like it was a homemade recording and I wouldn't buy this. This looks like something's messed up here. Well, it was available to buy as a season in iTunes for like $8. So I'm like, okay, whatever. I bought it. I watched it. It was really, really bad 80s TV. The first episode was kind of cool. The rest of it was very cheesy. If you're like a Westworld fanatic, it may be worth your attention, but otherwise just stay away. It's not good. And they kind of violate the canon too, which bugs me a lot. They take the story in a direction that's different from the original canon of the movie. So I am watching, I think I mentioned before, the second season of Making a Murderer. We're watching still more episodes of The Cool Kids. I watched the movie Bumblebee. I don't know if I mentioned this before.
I don't think so. This is the Transformers one, right?
It is. It's a Transformers origin story. I really liked this movie. I like this movie better than any of the Transformer movies. I thought it had heart. I thought it had a real story. I thought it had character development. I would argue that none of the other movies had any of those factors. They just had battle scenes that went on and on and on and on. They did have good soundtracks. I'll give them that. But yeah, I really liked it. So if you're a Transformers fan, I think you'll like it. And if you, like me, felt that Michael Bay took those movies way too far, then you really might like this movie. So I would recommend it. And of course, season 8 of Game of Thrones, the final season. We're halfway through now, and we are recording episodes of Let's Talk About Thrones the night after the episode is on, and Amos is getting those out like the next day. It's crazy, and it's been a lot of fun. And in the most recent episode, sorry, I got to pimp this, but we had Tom Merritt joining us to talk about the most recent episode of Game of Thrones. So lots of fun.
Nice.
All right. What is going on in your entertainment center, particularly if, as you confessed earlier, you're not watching any TV?
I haven't been watching much. I haven't even been watching much hockey since my Penguins aren't in the playoffs anymore. I've watched a little. I did watch.
Hockey is still going on?
Yeah, probably at least for another 5 weeks, probably. Yes.
Oh.
There was one game that I watched with so much excitement, so much interest, that you'll love, Richard, because I in air quotes, say your Washington Capitals.
I knew you were going to say Capitals.
In game 7 against the Hurricanes, who I don't actually care about, but on that night, we were all Hurricanes fans. And that game went into double overtime, and the Hurricanes won and knocked the Capitals out of the playoffs. And I was so excited. I was so excited. I love the Penguins and anybody who's playing against Washington.
So. Whatever.
On the gaming front, played a little bit of NHL as usual. Been playing, I've got like a regular schedule with my friends and coworkers. We play The Division on Thursday nights and Sunday nights. And it's taken us a little while, but in the last week, we've finally reached the end game. So we finally completed the last main story mission. We're finally in the level 30 they call it the end game. It's all of the stuff that you do once you've finished all of the primary stuff. There's new enemies. Everything's way harder. It's now just about going and getting really awesome gear and making cool characters out of all of it. I love it. It's still great. The story is not like the story is less good than the first one. It's the only part of The Division 2 that's not better than the first game. And that's okay. I don't really play this game for the story. Don't get me wrong. I would love it if it had a great story, but it doesn't. They spent their time on gameplay and that's fine. So that's great. Continuing to play that. Honestly, like I was just thinking today, like I feel like I've hardly purchased any games over the last 6-7 months because I've looked at myself and realized all I really want to play is hockey and The Division. So why buy anything else? Like there's other things coming out that I'm somewhat interested in, but I'm doing a better job of analyzing these games and going, if I had 2 hours to play, would I choose this over NHL or The Division? And the answer is no for just about everything else out there.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how much I love those games. So
now, are you going to be talking about The Division on Story Players, or does it not have that much of a story?
Oh, there's not nearly enough story to talk about on Story Players. Nope. It's not that kind of game.
Okay.
So that's it on the gaming side. I went and saw a movie in the theaters this weekend, a little indie project you might have heard of called Avengers Endgame.
Oh, yeah. I think I heard that didn't do so well this weekend.
Probably not. I had to stand in line for it, which seemed kind of weird for this movie that I thought no one had heard of. No, it was good. Obviously, me talking about superhero movies, I'm not your normal person when it comes to superhero movies. But frankly, maybe I should have Jen come in here and talk about Avengers Endgame. It was good. It was good. I'm not convinced it's the best Avengers movie, though. I'm not sure that it was better than Infinity War.
But which was really good.
It was really good. It was. Yeah. I mean, it's not like I'm saying, oh, it's not better than this mediocre pile of crap. No,
yeah.
It's not as good as a really, really good action movie.
Yeah, I think I would argue that probably Civil War and Infinity War are the two best in that series, if I were to kind of pick two.
I think most people would put both of those right near the top. Yeah, for sure. So for the like 8 people on the planet who haven't seen it, which I think probably includes you, right?
It includes Richard? Me. Right. It includes me because I haven't seen Captain Marvel yet. And you know me, I'm a completionist. So I can't see Endgame until I see Captain Marvel.
Oh, wow. And Tony in the chat hasn't seen it. Let me give you one tip. And this isn't a spoiler. Okay.
When to go to the bathroom.
Oh, actually, I can give you that also because it is a 3-hour movie and that's important. First tip, if you're the type who's like, previews, I've seen all of these previews and you're not really paying attention and maybe you're kind of chatting at the end of previews and stuff, or maybe that's when you're getting more popcorn out of the bucket or something like that, don't do that. Because whereas a lot of movies will have some sort of intro, title sequence or something like that, this movie does not start that way. It goes straight into a scene. Into a scene with
cold open.
Yeah, with no warning. It's just straight into a scene. And it's a good scene. It's a really good scene. I'm not going to say anything else about it.
I don't know that I have seen a movie in a good decade or more that had a cold open.
Yeah, this one does.
So cool.
So on the bathroom front, like that's a good question. It's a legit question because 3-hour movies, not many people can go 3 hours.
Crazy.
Movies. My wife is one of those people that can't make it 3 hours without going to the restroom. Like, that's a long time. I'm not making fun of her. She found an article on CNET. Maybe I should try and find it, or maybe it won't be hard to find, that actually lists three opportunities to go to the restroom. And they're legit.
And it does so without spoilers.
It does it without spoilers. They say,
perfect.
When Hulk is eating lunch, when the title says San Francisco, or when the title says New Jersey, I think it is. Absolutely, you can go to the restroom at those moments. It's fine.
Cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, now, looking back, you haven't seen all 21 movies, have you?
Correct. I did not watch either of the Ant-Man movies. I did not watch Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Those might be the only ones I haven't seen.
Hmm. You saw all three of the Thor movies?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, did it feel like, did it wrap the story for you?
Oh, it for like, sure wraps the story.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We know that, like, this ends this story line, if you will, but we know that the franchise lives on and there's a next phase that they're planning. So it'll be interesting to see like what that ends up looking like. And I haven't really done any sort of research or, I'm not kind of in all of the trade rags to find out, oh, okay, when are the dates for the next movies that are untitled yet? Because right. I don't care about that kind of stuff. But I'm excited to see what comes next, too.
Yeah, I am excited. I think, you know, I heard a guy who is a huge Marvel movie fan. Like, this guy has spent thousands of dollars on collectibles and paraphernalia and all of, like, he loves Marvel movies, loves comic stuff. And I heard him talking with someone else, and he said, I've come to the realization that these Marvel movies, they're not the greatest movies. They're not great movies. And I was just walking past the conversation. That's the only part of it that I really heard. And I thought, of course not. Like, they're still just action movies. These right. are still just summer blockbuster movies. These aren't phenomenal movies. They're just interesting.
Right. And they've like, become Michael phenomenal. Bay doesn't win Best Picture for a reason.
Right. Right. Like, a lot of people give me a lot of crap for loving Fast and the Furious movies. Like, let's be honest here, people.
They're fun.
Right. And from like a storytelling perspective and just what you're getting out of those movies, Marvel movies, not really that different from Fast and the Furious. It's still mostly just dumb action with some comedy. The Fast and the Furious characters are essentially superheroes also. They just drive cars instead of spaceships. Like,
speaking of which, I heard there's a new one.
Yes. Yeah. It's not actually Fast and the Furious. It's Jason Statham and The Rock. They're the two main characters. It's in the same universe. They are their characters from it. It looks hilarious. It's kind of like, it's like buddy cop, but when the cops don't actually like each other, that sort of scenario.
I'm totally in.
Oh yes. It's going to be great.
I'm totally in.
It's going to be so good. I'm super excited. All right. So that's it for things that I've seen. Now I need some help. I need some help from our listeners, because one thing that I can't see very well is anything on this computer, because the monitor that I'm using is terrible and old. The contrast is awful. Anything that's like light gray on white, I can barely see the difference between the light gray and the white. It's so bad. I hate using this computer monitor. I want a new one. I don't want anything insane. Like, Jen isn't, this computer sits in our dining room. I can't get a 32-inch monitor. That won't be acceptable.
Okay, so recommending to you the 35-inch ultrawide I just bought is probably not going to work.
Yeah, that's not going to work. Honestly, I don't have high expectations here. 24-inch is probably fine. I think that's probably fine. Like, I would like bigger, but I'm not sure that's really going to work out well for me.
Can you wait until Thanksgiving?
Really? Oh. Maybe.
I have two matching 24-inch 1080p monitors.
Because what I was going to say was probably 24-inch and probably still just 1080p. Because even if I'm going to game, which I don't do nearly as much of because video cards are so freaking expensive, I'm never going to buy a $1,000 GPU. And if I'm not going to buy a $1,000 GPU, I'm not going to be able to game at resolutions that are higher than 1080p. So why buy a monitor that's higher than 1080p?
Right.
So I'm thinking 24-inch, 1080p, but something that would work well for gaming. So fast refresh rate and just higher-ish quality, maybe higher than 60 hertz, maybe support FreeSync. Give me your recommendations, people. But that exists. Yeah, I know. Once I get into those gaming technologies, that's where I lose you. But I want a nice-ish looking monitor. And actually, I want it to be nicer than nice-ish. I want it to be a good-looking monitor. But I don't need crazy, crazy features. And I definitely don't need crazy high resolution.
And people can send you their recommendations where?
Either on Twitter, which is Josh Pollard, or use our contact form or the email address entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com, or just find all of our contact information over in the show notes at thedigitalmediazone.com. I gave you my Twitter handle. Richard's is just at Richard Gunther, and the website is at DigiMediaZone. We're also on Facebook. We've also got other podcasts. Richard, you've got a show called Home On covering smart home stuff. What's going on with Home On?
I do. So the episode that's out right now, again, is the kitchen commerce discussion that I mentioned last time that we recorded. That is out there. I think that's a really good discussion. So hopefully people have had a chance to check that out. Next up, I am so excited. I have Jennifer Patsentui, who is a tech journalist who contributes to The Wirecutter and The Ambient and Dwell, and she does YouTube videos. She is awesome, and she is going to be on the episode coming up next. We're going to be catching up on a ton of news because of all the special episodes that we've had. We're a little bit behind.
Yeah, I guess it has been a little while. Cool. That sounds like a great episode. I'm looking forward to that. OMG, my throat is so done.
Title.
All right. Well, I promised that a new episode of Story Players would be coming soon to wrap up The Walking Dead season 4. It is coming soon. Life has been bonkers between work and life, kids' activities and stuff, Easter and all of the stuff that went on around that. So it's mostly my fault. It's not Joe's fault. It's my fault. We need to finish that up and get that out to you soon so that you can have that on Story Players. And then for this show, just a quick reminder, we do the show live. We mentioned some of our live viewers tonight in the show. This is normally recorded Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, live video, live chat for you to join in and be part of the show. So come back and check it out next time, because that's going to do it for episode 483. He's Richard Gunther, and I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.
Goodbye.